Good morning. It's Wednesday, January 7th, 2009. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. My back is up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, and it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war. Flexibility.
War on the workers.
Every working stiff can see.
War on the workers.
Now when they poison your water.
War on the workers.
Don't pull like lambs through the slaughter.
War on the workers.
When they foul up the air.
War on the workers.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the workers.
When they talk WTO.
War on the workers.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the workers.
It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time, sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
Okay, and Feeney, starting us off with show number 525 for the Brain Labor Report. This is Wes Brain. I'm host of the show.
This is Jason Houck. I'm the engineer.
And it is Wednesday, January 7th. Days are getting a little bit longer for the light. You can't tell it yet. It takes a little while for that swing to get in the swing of things. So we're glad to be coming to you this morning right here from Ashland, Oregon. We are broadcasting over the airwaves at 94.9 FM. That's our low power FM radio station here in Ashland. We're a project of the Multicultural Association of Southern Oregon. And so there you have it. The Brain Labor Report is a Monday through Friday half-hour show, 7 a.m. Pacific time, and we talk about the issues of the day for ordinary working people. We may have to make the show longer. The list is getting longer. People are really having it tough these days, I'm telling you. People, hard-working people who get up in the morning, put their boots on, roll up their sleeves, and go to work, are finding that working hard, putting in long days, is not enough. This is a climate, and for years, the rich have been getting richer, the poor have been getting poorer. The class warfare that takes place in this country is just knocking the hell out of this ordinary worker who works very hard. People are losing their homes, people are losing their health care, some cases people are losing their lives, and it's the War on the Workers, and Feeney's song starts us off, called The War on the Workers, every single show from the Brain Labor Report. Always near the top of our half-hour show, we bring you the Workers Independent News. That's a syndicated 3-minute piece that's available around the country for folks who for stations, radio stations that take it. Only in Southern Oregon can this be heard at KSKQ, our low-power FM radio station, and the Brain Labor Report. So for Wednesday, January 7th, 2009, here's the Workers Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Tyson Foods will pay a fine of $500,000 for the workplace death of an Arkansas worker 5 years ago. Maintenance employee Jason Kelly died of exposure to hydrogen sulfide gas. The U.S. Department of Justice ruled that the company failed to take proper procedures to reduce the potential of exposure to the gas. The death occurred at Tyson's River Valley Animal Foods plant in Texarkana. Workers who recently made headlines by holding a sit-in at Republic Windows and Doors in Illinois have filed complaints with the National Labor Relations Board, alleging labor law violations against the bankrupt company. The complaints were filed on behalf of the workers by the United Electrical Workers Union, which represents the workers. The union is seeking a return to the plant of equipment that was removed by the company before it closed. The workers held their sit-in when the company didn't follow regulations that require companies performing mass layoffs to give proper notice or equivalent pay. The company eventually agreed to the employee demands that the law be followed. The world's largest aluminum maker announced plans Tuesday to fire 13,500 employees. Alcoa plans to reduce smelting capacity as worldwide demand for aluminum falls. As a result, the company will reduce its workforce by 13% and also let go of 1,700 contractors. Most Toyota plants are under a production freeze this week, and the company is now considering adding more work freezes as it deals with a monthly sales drop of more than a third. The company announced Tuesday plans to halt production for 11 days over the next 2 months at some Japanese plants, but didn't make any announcements concerning North America. U.S. sales fell by 37% in December, a trend seen throughout the auto industry. GM saw its worst year in nearly half a decade, while overall industry sales declined by 18%. Chrysler and GM have both idled plants this month in an attempt to keep down overproduction. Meanwhile, Korean car maker Hyundai has taken the unusual step of offering buyers the option to return new cars purchased within a year if they lose their jobs. The FBI has released a new wanted poster, this one seeking thousands of workers to fill newly open positions. The Bureau is looking to hire 850 special agents and an additional 2,100 support workers. The positions are becoming available because of retirement and attrition. The agency is seeking individuals skilled in foreign languages, information technology, security, training and education, automotive mechanics, and more. A complete list of needed skills is available on the FBI website. The job postings will be available until January 16th.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And you're listening to the Brain Labor Report. Our guest today will be Todd Davies. Todd is he's currently an associate director of the Symbolic Systems Program at Stanford University, and he's a past president of Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility. Jason and I talked to Todd when we were down in San Francisco in December at the LaborTech 2008 conference, and we've had a number of guests from Brain Labor Report guests that have come to us from that conference we attended, and Todd will be another. Todd's recently been to Mexico and Chiapas, and he's, I think our topic's going to be about Zapatistas, what's going on in Mexico. Mexico and some of their global work the Zapatistas are doing. We'll get him on the horn here. We're going to play a song while we do that. And Mr. Bill Lawson's tune, we've played this quite a bit before. It's been a while, though. It's Healthcare as a Military Campaign. The shorter version is Healthcare Now. Here it is right now.
As soon as they succeed in privatizing the military, you'd better get your gun. You've seen it all before, no compromising. You'll be defending yourself before they're done. We've got enough arms to protect us from without. Now we need a healthcare plan to defend us from within. We need national healthcare. National health. If the government does the job of running that need demands they do, and only they are qualified to wield that much power, and truly a campaign is essential to our national health, as national health is of equal if not greater magnitude.
And we need it now. Talking about national health care, and that is Mr. Bill Lawson. That is a wonderful song. I wish that one could be heard around the country. He's a local, and we wish Bill well. Some songs should be heard, and that is sure one of them. Okay, I think we're successful. I think we have Todd Davies on the phone now. Todd, can you hear us this morning?
Yes, I can. Thanks.
Well, Todd, thank you. Thanks for being our guest early morning here. And I've known Todd Davies. I've known him through Labor Tech, and mentioned that we talked to him when we were in San Francisco in December. But by gosh, I've known Todd via Labor Tech for a few years now. He's with Stanford University. Todd, would you help me, and for our guests and for Jason and myself here in the studio, would you help us with the introduction? Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I teach in a program here called the Symbolic Systems Program at Stanford, and that's focused on various relationships between people and computers or computation. So it includes some really technical subjects like artificial intelligence, and more of the natural science psychology parts like cognitive science, but also the interaction between people and computers. And my own work has moved more into that area, applying what we know about groups, group psychology, and decision-making to the design of internet tools for groups. And I'm particularly interested in groups like grassroots labor, coming together and making decisions democratically and collaborating online. So a lot of my work focuses on things like that.
Wow. Well, that's real interesting. I know your great support for the efforts for labor media, improving media, and of course that's the connection with labor tech. But I think that work is so fascinating. I wish we could figure out people would not misunderstand emails. I can't tell you. I don't know if wars have been started over this, but there's some bizarre situations. I bet you've been involved in them before too, where there's something about these computers. You know, they don't have the tone of voice. They don't have the back and forth of like looking at somebody and talking to them. And I didn't want to get off on this topic, but it strikes me as you're talking. Now there maybe is wars have been started over emails that are misunderstood. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Todd.
Sure. Actually, those are exactly the kind of problems that we're trying to address. You know, email has the problem that usually you create a continuous flow of conversation, but what you really want to be doing is referring to one continuing thing, like a document or something that you're trying to build. Or maybe you're trying to come to a decision and you want to vote on it. And email isn't well suited to those tasks. So people tend to get drift off into irrelevant discussions, or they paraphrase each other, and then they get angry. And so that's a function of the tools, and those kinds of problems are the things we look at and are trying to address in the next generation of tools that are being developed.
Well, that's totally fascinating. We have some work to go there. Everyone is used, not everyone. There's a whole group of people who don't even have a computer, but that group I think is getting smaller, and we really use them a lot, maybe too much. Todd, you recently, and we talked about for our discussion today, I think you just spent some time in Mexico and down in the area where we have Zapatistas down in Chiapas, is that right? I think our topic this morning is going to be, why don't we go there? Why don't we talk about what's going on with the Zapatistas and why should we even care? Would you tell us about your trip and what's going on?
Sure. Well, I started going down to Chiapas in 2002, which was later than several of my friends who went down soon after the rebellion in 1994 when the Zapatistas took over the city of San Cristóbal de las Casas and some other cities in Chiapas. And the state of Chiapas was the southernmost state in Mexico.
Okay.
And that experience for many activists from this country and others around the world, Latin America and Europe, was really one of the formative experiences, I think, for what became the global justice movement or the anti-globalization movement of the late 90s that led to the Battle of Seattle that many people remember. So I was in Seattle, actually, in 99. I was one of those people out helping to block delegates getting into the convention center. And that whole process of getting involved in the anti-globalization movement, which for me ran through experiences of living in Turkey in the late 90s, right before that.
Wow.
For many people, had come from the Zapatistas. I think they were the catalyst, and there's a kind of direct line of causation, actually, we can draw toward the Seattle mobilization and the other mobilizations around global summits that happened, and things that the Zapatistas were doing in the mid-90s. But for me, it was more like going back to the roots of of global justice, and what was this all about for the people who were originally creating it. And
sure.
So I went there in 2002 just to sort of learn more about it and to try and help out in a way that people often do, which is to be a peace camper in one of the communities there. This was actually called for by the Zapatistas soon after the rebellion in 94, that they wanted people from all over the world to come down and just live in these communities for periods of time to be witness and to be human rights observers, essentially. So it's more or less a passive role, but it does let the military know and paramilitaries and others that there are lots of people watching who might garner more media attention if there was harm that came to one of these communities. And
sure.
That's something that continues. So that's how I started going down there in 2002. And then I really got captivated by it and have continued to go back and now am on the board of an NGO, the Chiapas Support Committee, which does projects in support of the community aspects of the Zapatistas, that is the things that people do day to day, the needs like health care and education and food, things like that.
Wow. Well, that's fascinating, Todd. I know that kind of reflecting on what you're talking about, many people in this country learned a lot about globalization, about free trade and fair trade back in 99, the end of 99 with the WTO protests that you bring up. In fact, I'm one of them myself. I'd been, we had a labor tech over in Korea a couple of weeks before then, and Todd, it changed my life. There were people there from South Africa and from Europe, from all over the world. 2 weeks later, those very same people were in the streets of Seattle. And, you know, for this kid who grew up in the sticks in southern Oregon, it literally changed my view of the entire world. And I think it did lots of people's views. What took place then was the United States, this is my assessment, but citizens here, became involved, became informed, and became became informed about the globalization, the free trade, fair trade movement. And so I just wanted to comment on what you were saying, and we'll need to fast forward it here because we've got about 7.5 minutes for this conversation. So you told us about that and going in 2002. You recently went there. Let's pour forward, I guess, to today. You just came back from Mexico, and tell us what's going on today and what nuggets of information can we share with our listeners, please.
Yeah, well, starting about 3.5 years ago, the Zapatistas began reaching out much more both within Mexico and internationally to try to build a movement around people who share their goals and values. And it was called the Other Campaign, La Otra Campaña. That name was in reference to an alternative type of campaign to the one around the Mexican election that happened in 2006, which many of us remember as a very contested election that resulted in Felipe Calderón and the PAN party taking power. We're actually continuing power in with that party, but with a new president in 2006. So they began just about exactly 3 years ago with the outward manifestations of this, initially with a tour around Mexico that Subcomandante Marcos and the other comandantes, the commanders of the Zapatistas and others, did through Mexico throughout 2006. And then over the last 2 years, there have been various of what are sometimes called encuentros, large gatherings and conferences where Zapatistas come together with people from around the world to share to share. There's cultural sharing. There's also ideas. People are talking about their experiences. And so there were three of these encuentros that happened between the New Year's time 2 years ago and New Year's last year that were mostly about the Zapatistas explaining to, and this is people living in the villages, not just the comandantes and Marcos, but mostly people in the villages explaining to those who came to the gatherings what was happening. And so that those of us who've been to these have really gotten to know Zapatista life a lot better by going to these. But this year, they decided to do what they called a Festival of Dignified Rage, which was held in both Mexico City right after Christmas and then in San Cristóbal de las Casas in Chiapas right around New Year's. And this was a cultural and intellectual festival that was much more international in the participation, as most of the people who spoke were not Zapatistas. They were people, some from within Mexico, but many from other parts of Latin America and Europe and the United States and a few other countries, other places around the world, East Asia. This was, you know, I think building a movement, which all of this has been about internationally, and really kind of made the circle whole in terms of this dialogue that's been happening between the Zapatistas and other movements that are part of La Otra Campaña and the international, what's called the Sexta Internacional, which our group is a part of and which many others are around the world.
Todd, let me ask you. We've got, just about 3 minutes left to go this morning. For folks who are hearing this live and who might be hearing this in the archives for the Brain Labor Report, we are talking with Todd Davies. He's telling us about a recent visit to Zapatista country down in Chiapas, Mexico. And this is maybe strange sounding for folks who are not familiar with it. Todd, just a couple of minutes left to go. What is the take-home message? What is the message that you've brought home that we can share people about the movement in just a couple of minutes here in Mexico, please?
Well, the Zapatistas, I think, for many of us are interesting because they are a new kind of movement, of left movement, which brings together, I think, things that became very separated after the 60s. In this country we had and continue to have kind of a split between people who have focused more on human labor and the human costs of capitalism and of corporate control, who have done third world solidarity and labor activism, and focused on racism and exploitation on the one hand, and on the other hand, people who focus more on ecology and moving back to the land and kind of simplifying life, questioning aspects of technology, things like that. And those two movements have come together around the Zapatistas because they represent both sides of that. So, I mean, they have autonomy over their lands and are interested in preserving traditional ways of doing agriculture, for example, and questioning how much agribusiness and technology is needed. At the same time, they are a very progressive, what I might call a labor movement, because the campesinos are workers. They are farmers. And they were very much threatened by and hurt by NAFTA, which passed in 1993, and that was the trigger that spurred the rebellion in 1994.
Wow.
And, of course, there was a lot of exploitation of the Zapatistas prior to that on the lands where they now live autonomously. So the big thing that happened was that they took over lots of land on which they had been living as the equivalent of serfs or slaves. So this was really a major development, and the fact that the autonomy has been maintained over this 15 years is definitely something to celebrate.
Todd, we are running out of time. This is so fascinating. Would you be our guest again and we could continue the conversation in a week or two, please?
Sure. Be
happy. Why don't we say goodbye for now? And Todd, thanks for being our guest this morning.
All right.
Okay, folks. Hey, we're out of here. Sorry to end it so quickly. Fascinating topic this morning. We'll be back again tomorrow for the Brain Labor Report. Okay, everybody. Bye-bye.